Good morning. I think we'll get started on time. It would be awkward to have classroom management be late. So, my name is Nancy Lockett, and I taught school for the first time, I can't believe it, but it was 42 years ago. And I haven't been always teaching for 42 years, probably more like 37 or 38. I have 7 children, and so I would take a breather every few years from my family and go to school. And I've done classroom management talks before. I don't know if any of you have been to them or not. I try to be very practical, but what's common sense to me may not be common sense at all to you. But hopefully you'll pick and choose what you think will help you and let go of the things that you can't imagine why I would even suggest them. When I first thought about doing classroom management talks and they asked me about it, I was reminded of a lady that I heard speak years and years ago. It was a Sunday school class meeting kind of a thing, and she got up and she was very flustered, and it was a mixed group of men and women, and she said, oh, I can't even think, because she said, I have not scrubbed the tile in my bathroom in almost a week. And I thought, oh my goodness. And this other, I said, you scrub the tile in your bathroom more than once a week? And she said, yes, how often do you do it? And I said, well, once a month. I think I'm pretty proud of myself. And there was this husband and wife sitting there, and this little guy got this big smirk on his face. And his wife said, do not say a word. So, and what he said was, he kept waiting and waiting, and he said, well, we flush every time we go. So, wherever you fall on that spectrum, hopefully you'll hear something. Because I'm not a real particular planner myself, but I have certain routines that work for me, so I'll let you use what you can. But before that, I want you to just think about what you would expect to see, let's say, if you walked into a grocery store. You would expect, I think, an orderly arrangement of merchandise. You would expect that if there are people working there, they could tell you where to find something if you couldn't find it, that the shopping carts would be in a logical place. And if they weren't, or if it was messy, or you couldn't find anything, probably you wouldn't think so much about the quality of the groceries as the quality of the management in that place. And when parents and students come into your classroom for the first time, it's sort of like that. It's hard to recover from a bad first impression, because we all do that. It may be a lot of little things, but if there's a lot of little things that seem kind of disorganized, that's the reputation you will have, especially if you're a new teacher. It's not so bad for me, because I've been around so long, and I've been at Regents starting my 14th year. I'm from Regents in Austin. So if I mess up, hopefully they think, well, you know, she's probably just having a bad day. But if you're new, you don't have that behind you, so you have to be more careful. So I want you to think about that. Think about how you want to present yourself in your classroom to the people around you. And what I like to say is to remember that as whether you're a parent or just another adult or a teacher, you're the roadmap that your students or the younger people that you come in contact with are going to follow. When they want to know, what does a godly Christian woman do when things get disorganized, they're going to look at you or at me. Or what does a godly man do when someone speaks rudely to him? They're going to look at you. And you're the reflection of what they think is right. So I want you to think about that, and it's really hard. Okay, first of all, I want you to think about yourself. Even though I have taught at Regents 13 years, every single year at the end of the year, I thought I was going to do better this year. I thought I would get it. There's always something, and if you don't feel that way, then I think something's probably is wrong, because you ought to constantly strive to tweak it, to make it just a little bit better than it was. So I want you to think first, you'll never get it all done. If you've taught more than 1 year, you know there is no end to what you can do. So you just have to do what you can do and then give your family and yourself a break. If you have children, I'm sure you would not allow them to continue to do homework for hours and hours and hours. Once you realized it's not helping them anymore, you would say, just put it away and go to bed. And you need to do the same thing. You could stay up till midnight or later every single night, 7 nights a week, and still have things you don't get done for school. So you have to take care of yourself first. If you get on an airplane and they tell you how to use all the stuff, the bags that fall down, first thing they say is take care of yourself first. You can't help someone else till you have your own mask in place. So think about that. You can't help someone else if you're running on empty. At our school, we have teacher prayer time 3 days a week, and some teachers never go because they say they have too much to do. I'm telling you, if that's your priority, you need to back up and think about it. What could be more important than starting your day with fellow believers and praying for what you need to? So don't get so busy that you don't remember what's the main thing you're doing anyway. Okay, now when I talk about classroom management, what I mean by that is everything that a teacher has to do to organize your students, your classroom space, your time, and all the materials so that instruction can actually take place. And that seems like a no-brainer, but for some people, they don't understand. Usually it's brand new teachers, and I love you all, but usually it's brand new men teachers who say, oh, I don't care. I don't care where they put that stuff. It doesn't matter to me. Well, it really will matter in just a few minutes once school starts. So you need to think through for yourself where you want everything to be, what you want it to look like. And if you have a well-managed classroom, the first thing people should notice if they come in is that the students are all involved in work. It may not be quiet seat work, but they're all actively involved in their work. They don't have to wait on you to run down to the office and run off some copies that you forgot to do, or that they need a pencil and you can't remember where you put the extra pencils. So they should be ready to go because you're ready to go. Students in a well-managed classroom know exactly what to expect. If you are in a class and something like disruptive happens, if every student doesn't immediately look at you to see, oh, I know she's not going to let that go by. To me, there's a problem if no one even looks up. Because if no one even looks up, that you've somehow given them the impression you aren't going to do anything about it anyway. So the kids should know what to expect and know that you're in charge. You've trained them so that they know what to do as they walk in the door. They know what to do when they finish their papers. They know where their name on their paper goes. All of that. They don't have to waste time with questions like, do we have to write in cursive? And my kids will ask that until I will say, every paper that you ever do in this class, unless I say print, will always be in cursive. But if I say print and you, Billy, say, do I have to write in cursive? I will say, yes, Billy, you do. So they never ask. They just assume. In a well-managed classroom, there's very little wasted time because or confusion or disruption because everyone knows the materials are laid out, they're labeled, however you need to do it. I'm not real picky about things like that. Some teachers, and you may be one of them, and my room is labeled because I didn't label it. Someone labeled it before I had that room. But it's kind of handy. We have lots of beautiful cabinets to put stuff in, so if you label them, then the kids know where to get supplies without you having to go give it to them. I just encourage you not to get carried away because one of the cabinets in my room that I inherited actually said on the cabinet, storage cabinet. Okay. And I already... don't get carried away, but it does help the kids. If it's things that they're going to have to get into a lot, it's easier to have the cabinets labeled for that purpose. Okay. An effective teacher works on having a well-managed classroom. You have a place for everything, and everything is where it belongs. You've trained your students so that they know exactly what they're supposed to do. They know from the minute they walk in the room what you expect. And if you've taught for any time at all, you know they're going to, it's just like we're all human. We test the waters to see, I know what she said, but I wonder what she meant. So just be ready because it's going to happen. For example, on the very first, we have a back-to-school day and a meet-your-teacher day. And it's just an hour, and they just come in. But sometimes younger or less experienced teachers don't want to start anything the first day they meet the kids. I don't start anything, but I think they need to know. So if somebody comes crashing into the room, runs around squealing, I just say, I'm glad you're excited, but now would you go back out and show us the right way to come in? And I'm not fussing at them, but they already have figured out, whoa. And they go out and they come in the right way. So that's what I'm talking about as far as from the minute they walk into the room. Because I guarantee you, if you let one walk in like that, then his friend's going to have to go one more than him. And it's just going to go downhill from there. The students should already know what they're supposed to do and be working on it. And you should have a classroom that doesn't have a lot of wasted time, again, because you know and you have thought through exactly what you want them to do. The successful teacher is ready for school to begin. That means, ladies and gentlemen, that you get there early enough that you're sure everything is in order before the students arrive. It means that you're going to be in your room before your students get there. It means that you've already prepared the day before for everything you need for that day, because as sure as you think I'll run down there and make my copies, in our school, the fine arts department will be making 800 copies, or the copy machine is jammed. So be sure you don't leave the day before. And then if you're sick, it's really handy. You don't have to worry about dragging yourself in there to get things ready. Okay. As I said, you're the roadmap for your students. They're going to look to you. How's an organized person, how does that look? One of the things they're going to look at is how you dress. And this is when I start to feel really old. And everybody in your school has its own culture, I'm sure, and your own way of doing things. But what I would encourage you to do is to ask yourself, am I a good role model for these children to what a professional, educated man or woman looks like? Do they go to McDonald's and the people there are dressed better than you? And that's okay because McDonald's wears uniforms. But don't, unless it's a casual day for some reason, I think especially the younger you are, the more professionally you need to dress. Because especially if you're having discipline problems, you've got to not look like the big sister or the big brother. You need to look like the adult. So consider how you look to older students. Sometimes young, beautiful teachers want to be trendy and they want to be modern, but you really need to step back and see if you're giving the wrong impression to older students, especially boys, or even to dads. I've been an administrator, and there actually have been dads who come in and say, could you talk to Miss So-and-so about what she wears to school? As a Christian man, it's very difficult for me to walk in every day, and there she is. So think about what you're going to look like. What I say is, especially if you're teaching the lower grades, think through at home the activities you're going to perform in front of an audience that day and what is that going to look like in what you've chosen to wear that day. So if you're going to sit on the floor, think about what it's going to look like. If you have a high stool, think about what that's going to look like. If you're going to have to bend over to talk to the kids a lot, think about what that's going to look like. That's just common sense, but think about what it's going to look like. Okay. I've taught every grammar grade except second grade. So when I taught sixth grade, the end of the year, just for fun, I said, I'm going to do a workshop this summer, and this was several years ago, for new teachers. So write down some tips for new teachers. And one of the boys, and he was, love him to death, but he was a mess all year long. He never wanted to do anything. He was a complainer. He would pretend he forgot stuff. He would say he hadn't finished his work and I would find it in the trash. So he wrote down, and I need to look so I get the exact, he said, new teachers, you need to be sure you know what you're doing because kids will try to find out what you're not good at. And that's exactly right. As soon as they've been in the room with you for a few days, they're going to know your hot buttons. They're going to know what you don't notice. So you need to be sure that you know what you're not good at and you get better at that thing. Part of that is to be prepared, to come in prepared. You've got all the worksheets ready. you have morning work on the board. I don't know if you do. I always have morning work on the board. So the moment they walk through the door, they're not just running around like crazy people. It says, and it has said this forever and ever, sharpen pencils, copy assignments, complete worksheet or problems on the board or something like that. One day I was a little rushed. I broke my rules. And I just laid a worksheet on their desk. And so in the middle of the day, somebody said, I need to sharpen my pencil. And I said, you're supposed to do that when you came in. And they said, well, you didn't write that on the board. So I write it on the board every morning. But they should know. And my rule is, I think it's, well, I'll tell you as we go along, I think one of the problems that has happened through the generations, and I'm a parent of some of those generations, is that children are no longer held accountable and responsible for their choices. So in Mrs. Lockett's world, everything is a choice, and I just let them live with their choices. But I will explain, if you do this, I'll know you want me to do this. And you know what? I just say that very matter-of-factly. They never, ever, I have never once had a kid argue with me about that. For example, if I say, if you speak out again without permission, I'll know you want silent lunch. And so if they do, I'll say, okay, yes, you can. And they go, yes, ma'am. Because they know they chose silent lunch. I had a little girl one day, all day long, she kept drawing pictures. Driving me crazy. She wasn't supposed to be, and she was drawing some big pictures. She kept working on it all day long. And I kept saying, put that away. You're not supposed to be drawing. And she would say, okay. 5 minutes later, she's, you know, you've been there and done that. So I finally said, if I see that out again, I'll know you want me to throw it away. So here she is, 5 minutes later, drawing. And I said, yes, I will. And I threw it in the trash. And then she started yelling and crying. And she went, I've worked on that all day long. And and I said, I know. That's why I was so surprised you chose to throw it away. But isn't that true? So just remember, life is full of choices. Now, I try not to smirk when I say that, but it's true. So when they walk in the morning, my rule is you may talk as soon as you've done everything on the board, but you may only talk to someone else who has done everything on the board, which basically means no talking. But I don't say that. And so once in a while, someone will finish and they'll look around and they'll go over and visit quietly with, and I don't care. They did what they were supposed to do, but it's a choice that they make. Okay. What you need to do to be prepared, I think, is to study yourself. I know that sounds silly, especially if you're teaching grammar school, you may not think you need to. But I read over, even though I've taught it for years, the lesson before that morning, because then I try to think, okay, what about this is going to cause a question? What are they going to ask about this? And kind of have in my mind the right answer, or at least where I could suggest they go to get the right answer to their question. So you need to be prepared. For myself, you may do all your grades online. It's real hard for me to do things online. I just rather write them out. So in my grade book, in my old-fashioned grade book on paper, I put all the subjects in the order that they are on our report cards. Because then when it's time for me to do report cards, it's real easy for me to just go through, flip through my grade book, and I'm going down. So that helps me organize. How many of you still do write out grades and write out report cards? All three of you. Anyway, that's what I do. Also, if you want to keep track of discipline issues or anything like that, my rule is at the end of the day, I'll jot myself a note. And a teacher asked me once, well, what if I forgot by the end of the day? And I said, then it probably wasn't a big deal. I mean, if it was a big enough discipline problem that I want to let a parent know, I'm not going to forget it by the end of the day. But if you think you will, I keep a little note card. It could be positive things. As a parent, I like real specifics. If someone's going to tell me about my child, whether it's something good they did or something not so good, I like very specific details. So having note cards for each student will help you. I always have a calendar on my desk that you flip the pages. as by the day, because then if someone got a homework notice and it's due the next morning when they walk in, I'll flip it over to the next day and write their name, because I will forget stuff like that. And those kids that forget are going to coast through the day hoping you don't remember. So I always write it on there. And it's the same thing if they owe me, and I don't make them sit out much. Honestly, my kids just follow the rules because it's their choices. And so I don't, one of the kids, when I was in sixth grade, these students were coming up the hall and one of them said, Miss So-and-so uses tally marks and Mr. So-and-so uses, and they put your name on the board. And they said, Mrs. Lockett, what do you use? And I said, I use stop it. And so they said, oh, that worked. So we don't usually have a bunch of issues, but if they make a bad mistake, what I say is, you just need some time to ponder. And because I love you, I'm going to set aside 5 minutes for you to ponder why you chose blah, 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 blah. And then I always say, you know, we have a jam-packed day, and the only available time I have today would be 12 to 12:20. And this one kid went, okay, what's that? And his friend went, recess. So I just say, you need to ponder. And if they don't get their assignment book signed, the first time I call that a day of grace, because we all make mistakes. And so for us, they're supposed to get it initialed every night. So if they come in and it's not initialed, I will say, this is your day of grace. And you know what? They will tell me, like halfway through the year, I'll say, have you had your day of grace? And they'll say, yes. And I say, okay, 5 minutes to ponder. Now, when they go to ponder out on the playground, at the end of their 5 minutes, they actually have to come back to me and tell me their new plan. And they take it very seriously. And so they will come back and say, okay, I'm going to go home, and when I get my assignments done, I'm going to lay it on the table where my mom will check it. And so they have to give me a real plan. And one little guy, 1 year, fourth grader, I said, okay, Luke, 5 minutes are up. What's your plan? And he said, can I have a few more minutes? I said, yes, take all the time you want. So they take it seriously if you take it seriously. I try to have classical music playing in the mornings when they come in. If your school is like mine, you're assigned composers and pieces usually, and so if you are, you can write it on the board for them or put a note up somewhere so they know what they're listening to. When they come in the door in the mornings, you should be there to greet them at the door. My rule is if I'm not in the room, you don't go in. I think that's the way for you to have control over what's going on. And also, it makes sure you're there, because it's very obvious if you have all of your students are standing out in the hall and it's after 8 o'clock. So my rule is they wait in the hall until I give them permission to go in. And I think that's just good, because it makes you in charge of what's going on. And think about it. If you aren't in there when class starts and you come in 5 minutes late carrying your Diet Coke or your cup of coffee, you've given them a pretty good signal to what your priorities were. Okay, so always get there early. Most of the teachers on our hall, we're just at our door greeting the kids as they come in. It makes everything calmer, because you know what happens if you're not there. Okay, the next thing we're going to talk about are procedures. And if you think about procedures, is a big word that just means knowing what you're supposed to do. If we talk about someone as being ill-mannered, usually what that means is they either don't know the procedures or the customs, or they don't care, one or the other. So your classroom is your own special culture, and your procedures may be very different from mine or from the teacher next door. We all follow our school's guidelines, but other than that, you can have your choices in your room. But remember, I always say it's much easier to lighten up as the year goes on than to tighten up. So it's better to start. I don't believe you can't smile until Thanksgiving, which is what they used to tell me. But I do believe that you should start out with pretty structured, and then if you have a class that doesn't need it, great. And some years I've had kids that other teachers would walk by and they couldn't believe, they were so jealous. But I had a bunch of firstborn kids who just came in and lined up and did all their stuff. And And that, so I didn't need a bunch of rules for them. So you just, but I would start out with the rules. And some of the things I've listed for you, and you may have lots more thoughts than I do on this, is how to enter the classroom. And we've talked about that. I need to be in there first. They should know what's on the board. They've already been told from the very first time I met them, when you come in, unpack your bags, hang your backpack out in the hall, put your lunchbox in this basket, sharpen your pencils, and here's what you do. And they need to know, it's very comforting. If you're nervous and you're going somewhere, even as an adult, if it's laid out so clearly, you need to go here, even like for this conference. You park here, you come up here, there's where you get your name tag, your room is over here. It just is more relaxing for everyone. So the kids need to know exactly what's going to happen and how it's going to look. And like I said, from the very first day, once you've said, here's how you enter, you need to hold them to that. Don't say, well, I'm busy, and they just run in. It will only unravel more and more if you do that. And I've told you I have them get to work right away, which means you need to have been there to put on the board what you want them to do. And the reason I do that is because at our school, the students can come into the classroom starting at 7:45. But their class officially starts at 8, and then you have the latecomers. So I usually have work on the board 7:45 to about 8:05. They have that time because I can't start class anyway. Another thing is when it's time to dismiss, and you know what that looks like, and I'm sure you don't just say, okay, go home. But remind them. I keep the assignments on the homework assignments on the board from in the morning all day long so that, and I kind of remind them, check the board. See if you've got what you need to take home with you because, you know, there's always someone who forgets. And if they keep forgetting, my job is to help them. That's what I do. So I had a little fifth grade boy, and he would never bring home anything because he forgot every night. And so I said, well, your plan is not working, which is what I tell parents to tell their kids. They can study how they want, but if their grades start falling, then I would say, we've tried your plan, and it didn't work, so we're going to try my plan for a few weeks. And so my plan for this little guy was, I said, now tell me what's wrong. And he said, well, I forgot my math book, or I didn't. So I said, you know, I'm going to help you have a plan. Bring me your backpack. You know what my plan was. So I opened his desk, and I put every single thing in his desk in his backpack. And one of the things was this great big huge book. I can't remember what it was. This was way back in Alabama. And he said, oh, we don't have an I said, oh, you can't be too sure. So I crammed. So he had everything but the dust out of his desk so that he's walking like this. But you know what? I said, do you think? And then the next day I said, do we need to pack you back? No, I think I'll remember. He never forgot again. So that really does work, is just let them take, because you're trying to help. When it's time for my students to line up, I have two, and again, I could just make them line up exactly how I wanted to. I could if I needed to. But what I'm trying to teach them, everything in life has consequences. Your choices have consequences. So what I say is, if we're lining up to go to lunch or to recess, we're on your time, and you can take as much time as you want. I don't care. I personally, in August, hope they're slow because I don't have to go outside so long. So, but if we're going to fine arts or chapel, that's my time, and they will line up immediately. So I will just say, and they know that, okay, it's time for snack, and then I dramatically pick up my stopwatch and just go sit down. And so I just wait till they're ready. And at first they will talk, and they'll say, oh, I thought we were going outside. Yeah, we are, whenever you get ready. And I just keep doing whatever I'm doing. And finally I'll hear some of the kids going, y'all, it's our time, it's our time. So one time, but the thing is, this will not work unless you really don't care. I mean, I really don't care if they waste 15 minutes of their 20-minute recess. What do I care? I get to sit inside and grade papers. So I don't remind them. I don't think this works because I've had teachers say it didn't work. And I kept saying, you need to hurry. I said, don't say anything. It's not your time. It's their time. So I sat there, and this class went on and on and on and on. Finally, I said, oh, you're ready. So, and they had used up 10 of their 15 minutes.
I love this.
So I said, okay, let's go. So we got outside, and it was like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I blew the whistle, and the really wise kids went, and the confused kids were still confused. And I'm going, man, this seemed really short today. And one of the little boys, he said, did we have a shorter recess than usual? And I said, no, we always come in at 10:15. He went, boy, it just seems shorter. And I said, no, this is what time we always come in. And he said, well, why did it seem so short? I said, well, it could be that you talked the first 10 minutes. And he went, oh. But never, ever again did they ever do that. I told another teacher this, and she said, you cannot be doing that. Your class is the first one at lunch every day. And I just smiled. They are, because they know it's their time. And they also know the big kids are going to get in line ahead of them if they don't hurry. And the same way, when it's time to go at lunch, they know the routine. So I will say, when you're ready, we'll go to recess. And then I go sit down, and I never look up or say another word, because I don't care. If they want to stand in the lunchroom and act like goofballs for their whole recess, I don't care. I mean, it's a life choice. But my class, almost without exception, is ready within 10 seconds to go out the door, because they figured that out. And to me, that's so much better than me after them every minute to be quiet. It really works. Doesn't work when it's not their time. If it's your time, they need to go right away. So that's what I suggest to you. Okay, getting ready to change subjects. I just try to give them a few minutes warning if they're doing, because that would frustrate me. So I'll say, okay, you have only 2 more minutes. So if you're in the middle of a problem, don't start another one. And I think that just helps it to go more smoothly, to be considerate of what they're doing. As far as keeping their desks orderly, I explain what that looks like the first day of school. In your desk, I should see this, this, and this, but I should never see this, this, and this. And then they know exactly what that looks like. And then, and I started this several years ago, and some of you will think this is goofy, but oh well, it works for me. I told them one day that I had heard that there was a desk fairy. And that the desk fairy, you never knew when she might show up, but when she did, she might leave a treat if your desk was perfectly arranged. And I do that like maybe 2 times a year. I mean, but it's so funny, because I open the desk and I have to make for myself, here's what I'm looking for, because otherwise I get too tenderhearted and it was only a few things out of place. So I know exactly what that's going to look like, and it's usually like a little mint. It's nothing. It's like nothing. But they think it's something. So anyway, I leave that in their desk for them, and so they know, and they will say, is the desk fairy coming this week? And I said, well, I don't know. She doesn't tell me when she's coming. So the desk fairy works. Even when I had 6th graders, they would beg for the desk fairy. So it does help to keep it clean. Now, to me, the difference between that and a bribe is if I say, I'll put a piece of candy in your desk tonight if it's clean. A reward is what I call, maybe twice a year, a mint, because they kept their desk clean. But they try to keep it clean, because who knows when that fairy might come along. Let's see. Asking for help. For me, I have one of those little spindles you can buy at Office Depot, and I put numbers on it, like those little paper rings that you put on keys, so that I have a number for every child. And then if they need help, obviously the first person I just help. The rest, they just come and take a number, especially if we're doing math or something that requires more effort. And one of the reasons for that for me is, if I were a student doing my math problem 10, and Mrs. Lockett is standing right beside me at my friend's desk explaining problem 12, that would drive me crazy. So they just take a number and go sit down, and I tell them, leave a space for the problem you're working on that you can't do by yourself, and then when I call your number, you come up, and I'll help you with that one. And so most of the time, if their number wasn't 1, 2, or 3, when I call 4, I figured it out, which they could have done all along. And then you don't have this long line of kids standing at your desk, so they can't do that. And then I just dump those numbers out and scramble them up. If we're reading, do an oral reading or something, I'll just pluck a number, because each student knows their number. And so I'll pull a number for them to read. And that's helpful, because if you don't, the kids that don't want to pay attention are going to notice right away everybody reads about a half a page. And if you're going down the row, they're going to say, okay, I'm going to be the 4th kid, and they're going to put their finger on where they're going to read when you call on them and not pay any attention. So I pluck the numbers out. Plus, I say, if you don't know your place, I'll skip you. And so they want to read. So anyway, that's how I do it. And the numbers really help. It's a very organized way to do it. I'm looking at my list here. Oh, keeping a folder or a notebook. We don't have so much now. They have a binder, but in the binder, they have a subject tab for each one. We go through that at the beginning of the year, and I tell them, when you flip to science, for example, here's what I should see under that tab. And if things are not in the right order, especially for fifth or sixth graders, what I used to do is have a notebook quiz, a pop quiz. And I really did count it as the daily grade. And the notebook quiz was just basically me saying, okay, flip to the science section. What is the third word on the second note page? And so it was all they had to do was write down what was there. Or, okay, in your poetry section, what is the second line of the poem? So all it meant was, and they couldn't flip back and forth. They had to know it, know where to find it. And so that helped them. At the end of each quarter, we're on a 9-week system. I have them clean out their binders because some of them will have everything forever in there. So that, and I tell them, take it home if you don't want to throw it away, but it can't stay in your binder because it's too big a mess. So we clean them out at the end of every quarter. For ways to come to attention, to me it doesn't matter what your way is, but you need a way so that they know no matter what, this is what, when Mrs. Lockett or whomever says this, here's what I need to do. And mine is really complicated. It's just, may I have your attention, please? And so they know no matter what they're doing, whether we're having indoor recess or whatever, if I say, may I have your attention, please, every single person immediately stops talking, even if they're in mid-sentence, and looks at me. And that's just my rule. And if they don't do it, well, you know, I want to give you time to practice, but the only time I have available is 12. So, and we will practice if they need practice, and it really works. And I also just say, if I come to the front of the class, that should be obvious that I'm coming up there to speak to you. So if I don't want to say, may I have your attention, please, if I walk to the front, they know that's what I want them to do. And also, if I'm wanting them to pay attention, and this can backfire, it did on me before, but if I want them to pay attention, sometimes in the middle of, like right now, I'll try this, please work with me here. So I'm just talking along, explaining, and I'm saying, if you're listening, wave. I did that one day, and out of a class of 20, one little guy went. I was really embarrassed, but I thought, whoa. So every once in a while, just for fun, I'll say, snap if you're listening, and I don't even slow down. And it's really a great way, because to them it's like a contest, and sometimes we make it a contest, me, and we'll put the score on the board, you and me, and I want to see how many times I can catch them. But I've never, once they know I'm going to do it, I've never had to do that. I might say, scratch your head if you're listening, pull your ear if you're listening, snap your fingers. And it's just easy to keep them engaged. Okay, the light's shining on my notes, so I have to tilt it up. Passing in or exchanging papers, I don't really have a real big system for that, except on if we're doing something that we all finish at the same time, like a spelling test, I have them bring them to me in alphabetical order. It's just a little thing, but it saves me time. But again, you don't want to stampede. So what I will say is, okay, bring me your papers. That means A. And as soon as I touch A's paper, B knows that's when you get up. You don't just start running at me. And so we do it. And if someone is not quite ready, I can hold my finger there and keep going. But it really makes it very quick to hand out papers if they brought them to me in alphabetical order. If we're just doing some kind of work and I want someone to pick them up for me, I have them go systematically down the rows, because some kids just hop all over. Then you've got a mess when it's time to hand them out. It's easier if they're all in the order that they sit. So that helps me. Going to lunch and recess, I've already talked to you about that. I strongly suggest you figure out what your time and my time, our time is, and you let them deal with that. When a visitor comes in, I don't know, it probably depends on the part of the country you're from, I don't know. But in the South, or at least in Austin, Texas, what we do is the students rise. If an adult comes in, they stand up and wait for me to say, boys and girls, would you say good morning to Mr. Smith? And then they say in unison, good morning, Mr. Smith. And then I say, thank you, you may be seated. So I think that's just good manners, because in probably anywhere when an adult comes into a room, at least for men, they're going to stand up to greet them. So we just try. And the same way when we line up, the boys always line up behind the girls. And you know, they've done it since kindergarten. They don't even think about it. When it's time to line up, all the girls line up before all the boys. And the door holder is always a boy. And it's they don't even think about it. And I think that's good that they don't have to think about it. Okay, I'm trying to hurry. It would be embarrassing to finish my talk on management late. Proper response. Oh, asking permission to leave the room. We have normal bathroom breaks, like before school, snack, lunch, and then that's it unless they have an emergency. But what I say is that goes back to, you go to the restroom on your time, not my time. That means on the way to recess, not on the way back from recess. That's just, now I'm very flexible about that at the beginning of the year because it takes them a while to get their bodies back into the routine. But after that, you go on your time. You go when we're at lunch, or you go on the way to recess. You don't wait till we come back in. And so I don't really have a bathroom break during the day except for that. I assume that they're going to be honest with me. And if they say, can I please go to the restroom, I almost, without exception, it's in the mom's handbook, say, can you wait 5 minutes? And they will say yes. And then I kind of keep an eye on them. And you can tell if they really cannot wait 5 minutes. And so I'll say, go ahead and go. But I tell them, if it's an emergency, no matter if I say, no, you cannot go right now, if you know it's an emergency, just say, I'm sorry, Mrs. Lockett, and get up and go. And they're not going to do that on purpose. And there's been unfortunate incidents when they didn't do that. So, okay. As far as your classroom setup, I would always begin the year with kids in rows, not in what they call pods or little groups, just because you don't know the dynamics of your class maybe yet. And it's easier to have them in a row that you, the teacher, can walk between the desks, I think. Sometimes you can't, but for the most part. But make sure that the high traffic areas to the pencil sharpener, to your desk, to line up are nice and clear, so, and where their lunches go, so that everything is organized for them. And like I said, plan where you want them to put their stuff. I don't like things hanging on the back of their chair because sometimes it flips their chair over and it just looks messy. So everything has to be out in the hall. And in our school, there's only certain indoor sweaters or jackets they can wear. If it's not a uniform jacket, they can wear anything outside but not inside. So I always have them hang it out in the hall where our racks are, because if it's on their chair, they're going to end up putting it on. So that's just me. You don't have to do that. Well, I will check on you, but for the most part, I will check it out. Okay, as far as your desk, it should be where you have a clear view. I like to have a clear view of the door. It's so sad that our world we live in now, but I like to see if anybody's standing at the door. I don't want to be over in the corner where the kids see somebody standing out there, but I can't see it. So I like to have a clear view of the door and a clear view of the majority of the class, and then a space for the kids to come up if they need to talk to you. And remember, you're the model, you're the roadmap. So your desk, and mine gets pretty bad by the end of the day, but it starts out every day really nice and neat, and it should end up that way so that the students see that you're modeling for them what you want them to do. For me, my desk is off limits. That means they cannot come up and open the drawers of my desk. Some kids will come up and just get the scissors off my desk. I just think that's bad manners. And I will always, almost always say yes if they ask, but they know you do not come and take anything off my desk unless you've asked permission. And the same way, if they say, can I have a new eraser, and I keep them in my desk because they're going to use too many of them, and I'll say, I'll get it for you, because they know. They say, I know where they are. And I said, I know, but would you get in my purse to get something? Oh, no. So I just, to me, that's a boundary that they need. As far as your general classroom appearance, hopefully, I don't know how your school is. We try to keep everything very classical as far as the colors that we use, not the bright neon pinks and greens, but make it more classical, not having a lot of what we call visual noise. If there's stuff everywhere, all over the walls, It may not bother you, but it would drive me crazy. And those distractible kids, it really does. So we try to keep it as calming as possible. We have a number timeline, and we try to keep it on eye level with the students so that they can see what's going on and notice it. Have an area to display student work. And what I have done and other teachers in my school do is we just laminate black construction paper so we have ready-made frames or mats for all, so that we can stick those up. We put them on the cabinet walls usually. So those black frames are always there, and then it's real easy. You just stick new papers up on it and rotate them out without having to mat everything every time you do it. When your students, especially the younger grades, I always feel like this makes me sound mean, but I'm not. But, well, I'm not. But what will happen is usually some cute little girl will draw you this real pretty picture with rainbows and hearts on it and tells you how much she loves you and it is precious. But I'm telling you, if you stick it up on the wall by your desk or stick it on the side of your desk, what will be there tomorrow? 400 more. So one of my principals years ago said, just get a keepsake folder. So that's what I have. It's just a pocket folder, and I write it in great big letters, keepsakes. And so if they bring me that, I just say, I do love it. Thank you. I want to keep this in my special folder. And I pull it out so they can see, and I put it in my keepsake folder. And I don't empty it the whole year, because once in a while somebody will say, remember back in September, and I'll pull it out and say, yeah, there it is. So if they write me a note, anything like that from them, and you can hang them on your wall, but you're going to have a mess pretty quick if you do. So I have a keepsake folder that I put them in. Okay, I'm going to fast forward through some ideas that hopefully will help you. And again, take what will help you. Don't use what won't help you. Because if you try to say, well, Nancy Lockett said do that, it won't work if it wasn't something that's comfortable for you. But for every subject, what I say is have a routine beginning. The first week of school, I don't do a lot of teaching subjects. I do a lot of teaching procedures. And I will say, okay, boys and girls, when we have Bible, I will say, get ready for Bible, and here's what that means. And I say very specifically, the only thing I want to see on your desk is your Bible and your memory verse, if it's written out. And when I say get ready for spelling, here's what this means. So they need to know. And then sometimes I will say, we'll start when you're ready. Okay, so they need to know what each thing looks like. As far as possible, I think you should do the subjects in the same order every day. You may have music and PE and different things that bump your schedule. And I do, but I still have Bible, spelling, math, literature, history. They know the order, even if they don't know if it's going to be at 10 o'clock or 10:45 that day. They know, and they're so well trained. Like when my kids come in from PE, they come in, and before I can get the door shut, and I love this, they will all have their literature book out because they don't have to wonder, what do we do next? They know we come back from PE, we do literature. So if you have a schedule like that, and the kids love to surprise you, and I'm always very dramatic and stagger backwards and I'm so excited you did that, you know. This little girl from, I don't know where she was from. She had a real twangy accent. She was in my class, and whenever they would do something, I'd go, and that just means, oh, that's so sweet. And so I was real dramatic. And she told her mother, Miss Lockett almost has a heart attack every time we do something. I said, okay, that was just heartwarming. I wasn't having a heart attack. As much as possible, do things in the same order. Don't start when everyone is not ready. If you say, okay, get ready for math, and then you hear thrashing and bumping and banging and you start your lesson, that's sort of pointless because half of them won't hear you, okay? So, and by the same token, if you say, may I have your attention, please, get their attention before you move on, okay? So don't start until they're actually ready. Students should have practiced that until, like I said, when I say get ready for spelling, no one says, do we need our, they don't ever have to ask that again. They know exactly. I use cover sheets if it's a test that we're all doing, like spelling, And what I use for cover sheet is I get a copy of the handwriting style that we use, and I laminate that sheet because sometimes even in fourth grade, I don't remember how to make a cursive Z. Well, it's right there in front of you. So their cover sheet is actually their alphabet. And we used to put the editing marks for writing on the back of it, so they had a ready reference for that. And if you use consistent marks, that would still be good. For labels on their desks, I like the real pretty things where you put their name tags on their desk, but they don't stay very well, and the kids pick them and drives me crazy. What has worked for me better than anything is just white labels, those peel-off labels. They aren't pretty, but they're tidy. And so I just put it, and that's part of my telling them at the very beginning of the year, this should look as good in January as it looks right now. And every once in a while, the desk fairy will notice that their name tag is not messed up at all. And so they get special credits for that. if you can't do that, a lot of our teachers put them on the front of their desk right here. So it's not there where it's going to bother the kids, and you can still see it from the front. And the only reason they know their name, so they don't really need a name tag, but it helps me if I decide to rearrange desks after school sometimes or something like that. I have a basket where the kids know if you bring me a note for mom or dad or money for a trip, it goes here. Because otherwise, you may find it at the end of the day under something else, and it said, please call me by 9 o'clock this morning. So I always have a special place. This is another thing that I started many, many years ago. When I taught in Florida, we didn't get out of school until June. And so, because I let kids make choices, if they would bring a toy or something to school that they were playing with, I would say, if I see that again, I'll know you want me to put it in my June box. And my June box means you will get it back in June. And some teachers now have May bags or May boxes. I like the name June box better. So I have a June box, and it says Mrs. Lockett's June box on it, and it's in a place of honor on the little window ledge. And if I see something out, I'll say, I'll know you want me to keep it if I see it again. If I see it again, I'll say, go ahead. And they have never, ever argued. They go put it in the June box. And my rule is you get it back the last day of school. Now, once in a while, you'll have a parent who doesn't want their little baby to suffer, and so they think that's really unfair for me to take it. So I will tell the parents at back to school night, if it goes in my June box, it's there until June unless you, mom or dad, personally come up to my class after school and ask for it back. I will give it to you because I really can't not give it to them, but I don't want to, but anyway. But so I had a kid, and I took his Rubik's Cube away from him, and he said, well, my dad will come get it. I said, well, he can come and get it. That's okay. So it's like a week went by, and his dad didn't come and get it. And I heard the other kids ask him, he said, when's your dad coming to get it? And he said, he's not coming to get it. So, but it really does work. And then it's kind of fun. At the end of the year, last day of school, I take the lid off the June box, and I just start holding things up. And they, oh, yeah, you took that away from me back. And it's kind of fun. So I never have doodads hanging around because they're in my June box. Let's see. I don't have a bunch of student helpers. I used to, and it drove me crazy with all this 42 jobs. So now I just have teacher's aides. So I have a boy and a girl, and each week I have a new teacher's aide, and they do everything. And so it's so much tidier and so much neater. And someone was talking about they had to go over their jingles one year, and I said, oh, I just had my aide do that. And she went, you have an aide? and she thought I meant an adult that was getting paid to help me. And I said, yes, I have two of them. And then she was getting really upset, and I told her, so it's really the neatest. They clean the lunch tables if I need to send something to the office, if something needs to be passed out, if the board needs to be erased. I have two people to do it. The girl aide is always the line leader. The boy aide is always the door holder. It's just simple, and I don't have to have a big chart and try to keep track of it. I always try to this I started a few years ago, and as you can tell, some of my kids think I'm Mrs. Frizzle, but I have all these plans, and every year it was driving me crazy when we would hand out rulers for math or whatever. They stick a pencil on it, and they're making helicopters, or they bring it up and say, my ruler broke, and all this stuff. So at the beginning of the year, whether it's a ruler or a protractor, I do it very seriously because I'm a serious person. And I say, okay, boys and girls, lay your protractor on your desk and then put your hands in your lap. And so they lay it on their desk and they put their hands, and I said, just be real quiet and watch it for a minute. And they watch, and I say, okay, did anybody's protractor move? No. Did anybody's protractor walk away? No. So can we conclude that a protractor is not a living thing? Yes. And I said, so if you bring a broken protractor to me, do not say, my protractor broke. You can say, I broke my protractor. And you know what? I have not ever had a broken ruler or a protractor since. Because it's their responsibility. So plus I number them. I keep them in a drawer, but they're numbered. So student one gets protractor one. And they know, because a lot of times if you don't number them, if theirs broke, they'll just go get one that's not broken. But now they know you're going to have that ratty-looking thing the rest of the year because you chose to do that. I found out a few years ago that all those little credit cards they send you in the mail, pretend credit cards, you know, which wastes money. I don't know why they do that. And I have probably 500 AARP cards, and I'm not even a member. Thank you very much. I use those for straight edges. So I have a drawer full of those plastic credit cards. And if we're going to draw something where they need to just draw a square, but I don't want to get out rulers, they can just get a credit card and use that. It makes really great straight edges to make nice, neat lines with that. And they're just in a drawer. Dealing with kids who tattle, you may not have ever had that problem. But what I say to them from the beginning of the year is if they say, so-and-so did such-and-such, I say, why do you want me to know that? Now, maybe because it hurts every time he hits me. And I tell them, if they're hurting you and words hurt, then yes, you can tell me. If you just want them to get in trouble, that's not a good plan. And so I say, what is your motive? Why do you want me to know? And so very rarely do they tattle to me because they're going to have to first say, why I want you to know this. And most of the time it's like, I was just wondering, if somebody was to wear pink socks instead of white, is there a rule against pink socks? Now, you already know somebody's wearing pink socks when they ask that. So they have to tell me why they want me to know that. The same way, and this was revolutionary, it kind of opened up a whole new world to me because I used to teach first grade, and almost every day at recess, one of the kids would say, Mrs. Lockett, he won't quit chasing me. Have you ever heard that? Well, I figured out the answer. I said, well, here's what you do. And they don't run. really, and then they just kind of laugh and go off. Can you chase someone who's not running? So if you don't want to be chased, don't run. Okay. My desks do not have a little place in them for pencils, a little pencil shelf. So I go to the pharmacy and ask for their fattest medicine bottles, those little clear, you know what I'm talking about. And I always say, I'm a teacher, and I was wondering how much you would charge me if I just needed 16 of the, and they go, oh, what are you going to use them for? And I tell them, oh, you don't have to pay me anything. And I know that's what they're going to say. But I always offer to pay. And if they said how much, I say, well, okay, let me think about it. But I just tape them to the leg of their desk so that then they have a pencil jar right there. I use that real wide packing tape. And it works great. And my rule is you must have two sharpened pencils in that jar at all times. And so it just makes it nice and tidy. And we took them off the last week of school, and some of my kids would do like that, and their pencils would fall on the floor because they were so used to dropping them in that little pencil jar. But it really works very well. Let's see. I'm trying to go real fast. Timeline cards, I have them, I run off labels ahead of time and put them on the cards so that when we study whatever, Attila the Hun, for example, I just say, whose turn is it to do a card? And I give them the card. It already says the date and the name on it. Then I jot their name down on the corner of the whiteboard, and they just erase it when they finish their card for me. And you, I usually take volunteers. Unless someone ever volunteers, then I help them volunteer. I have a history and a science table in my room, and I try to find books related to what we're studying in history and just lay them on the table from the either the school library or public library, same way with science. And for the history table especially, I will challenge them. I'll give everybody a note card, and I will say, sometime in the next few weeks, I'm going to let you share a fact that you found that you don't think anybody else would know. And they always find something. So they just have a card in it, and so they're in there digging in those books, which is what we want them to do anyway, looking for facts, and they'll jot them down, and they'll usually start asking me, when do we get sheriff information? And sometimes they find really gross stuff, but it's true, and it's in books. And it's kids don't know how to look things up in books anymore. They just Google it, and I do too, to find it. So if they ask me a question, I'll say, when you go to the library this week, try to find out, and I'm going to try to find out too. And a lot of times I don't know either, but I will find out and wait for them to do it. Okay. I use hand signals sometimes to, if we're going to be in some crazy situation where I want to be sure everybody is under control, but maybe they're back there. So for me, because I talk with my hands anyway, I tell them, if you look at me and I'm going like this, that means you've got an A right now. You are doing a fantastic job. And if I'm doing this, what do you think that would mean? It's three fingers. And they said B, and I said, yeah. And I said, and this, and they said, that'd be a C. And then I didn't realize how much I used this other phrase. And I said, and if I went like this, and this little boy said, that means woe be unto you. I said, you're right. So, but it was really cute that we had our medieval feast and everybody spread out everywhere. And so I'm sitting at the high table in my regal clothes. And one of the kids started fiddling with stuff on the table that he wasn't supposed to. And so in a minute he looked at me and I went, and he just stopped immediately, and I shared that with my daughter-in-law, and we were out in public once, and she looked at me and went. But it really works, and it's a fun way to do it, and you don't have to holler across the room. They just know. And then, anyway, okay, I think I'm through. I'm over time. The last thing I would suggest is look at your door as you get ready to leave in the afternoon. Stand there and look. Because that's what the parents are going to see, or a visitor's going to see when the view from your classroom door should be really nice and clean and attractive. And sometimes teachers, I think, forget that. So I constantly have the kids helping me clean up, and I will call it finger sweeping, because some of the kids, privileged kids, will go, oh, the janitor will do that. So that's not the janitor's job, is not to be your personal servant. If you can pick it up with your fingers, you pick it up. So that's part of being ready to go outside, is the room is clean, chairs are pushed in, desks are orderly. And it gets to be a habit, and they do it without me even asking. I'm sure you have a lot more. I hope some of this is helpful to you. And if you see me around this week and you have any other questions or ideas for me, I would love to hear them. Thank you very much.